I know. Every time I direct, I tell my fiance, every time I direct, I always have a craving for Hot Cheetos. He said, no, it's not when you direct. It's just always. And then he reminds me that Hot Cheetos doesn't turn into skin. And when he says that to me, it makes me think about everything I put in my mouth. All the food that I eat has to turn into skin.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a portrait of actress Gina Rodriguez. In 2014, Gina Rodriguez got her big breakout role on the CW show Jane the Virgin. She plays Jane, who's a young woman living in Miami who dreams of being a writer and then unexpectedly gets pregnant.
Pink means pregnant.
But I've never had sex.
Immaculata. You are Immaculata.
What? No, Mom.
Clearly, she's not a virgin.
Of course I am.
The show follows her Latino family as they navigate a series of telenovela-style twists, including evil twins and faked deaths.
You're alive? No, but it can't be. I saw your body hanging. There were EMTs.
Not real EMTs. Actors. Mother and I always be hiring actors to play prank on people.
And the show also addresses issues like grief, religious beliefs, and immigration.
Why do some people not want peace in this country?
Well, that's actually a really good question. And a really hard question. Because this country was founded by people who came from all over. Like your great-grandma.
In 2015, Gina won a Golden Globe for her role as Jane. And the show is now about to launch its fifth and final season. And Gina's been expanding into new projects, including her most recent film that just hit theaters. She's the star of the action movie Miss Bala, Bala meaning bullet.
In the end, the bullet settles everything. Hit me like a
Miss Bala is a remake of a 2011 Mexican film, and it tells a story of how an ordinary woman ends up involved in extraordinary circumstances. Her best friend gets kidnapped. Along the way, she gets caught up in the midst of a cartel war in Tijuana, and she essentially has got to fight her way out to survive. I sat down with Gina to talk about her passion for making Latino-focused work and how her childhood, growing up in a Puerto Rican family in Chicago, made her into the performer she is today. So we share Chicago.
Yes, yes.
So I grew up on the South Side. In Hyde Park.
I grew up on the north side, northwest side, by Fullerton and Cicero, by Craig Park.
Exactly. Because, phenomenal artists and writers and creators have come out of Chicago.
Oh, yes.
I mean, there's Sandra Cisneros, there's Ana Castillo, there's you, there's Justina Machado. I mean, we could go on and on and on.
Freddie Rodriguez. Yeah, there's a bunch.
Freddie Rodriguez. So when you think about Chicago and kind of growing up there as a kid, as a Puerto Rican kid on the Northwest Side. And I don't even know if at that point you were identifying, but what does...
100% as a Puerto Rican kid on the Northwest Side.
100%.
I mean, I lived in a predominantly Puerto Rican neighborhood.
So tell me a little bit about that and what did that mean? What did Chicago and that part of Chicago and that sense of community mean to you that you now understand helped to build you as an artist?
So I grew up on Fullerton and Cicero, on Keating and Belden to be exact. On the Northwest Side by Craig Park. That was my go-to park for summer camp every summer because my parents had to send us to summer camp because they worked.
Love it.
9 to 5 right. Every day. And right. We had to go somewhere. Predominantly Puerto Rican and Polish neighborhood, Polish immigrant neighborhood. Lots of first generation. So every year we would go to the Puerto Rican Day Parade in Humboldt Park. Humboldt Park is predominantly Puerto Ricans. It is like the Puerto Rican central, which is now sadly gentrifying. And we're losing, all the richness that did exist there to gentrification, which happens, sadly, I think, all over the country. So we would go to the Puerto Rican Day Parades every single year. And every year I would see the young kids dancing on the floats, and I would tell my parents, I want to do that. I want to dance. I want to dance on the floats. I want to dance on the floats. And when I was about 7, there was a call. This one company, Fantasia Juvenil, was performing, and I turned to my mom, and I was like, Mom, I want to dance with those kids. Like, I can do it too. And she walked up to the woman, Lucy, I'll never forget, and asked Lucy if I could audition for the dance company. And she said, yes, we're actually having auditions next week. And they were located about 10 blocks from my house. And I went, I auditioned. I mean, every Christmas, my family has the biggest party and we dance salsa for hours. I grew up dancing salsa. Like, I salsa'd out of the womb. My parents are the most bomb salsa dancers. My sisters, my uncles are incredible. Like,
Wait. So they do, like, because, you know, there's, like, old school salsa dancing where it's just, like, very
yes.
kind of, like, controlled but deeply sensual. Then there's also, like, the extraordinary salsa dancing where there's, like, these moves that are, like, gliding and they're switching and twirling. So your parents and you are, like, from...
Old school, definitely old school. And you know, it's funny because you said sensual, but it's more grounded in like this...
Connection.
This connection of like passion.
Right.
This the dance of like history, the like feeling of your ancestors. You know, sometimes when I put on music and I'm dancing, it's like I'm flying. And... I mean, that's where it all started for me. Because when I would dance with my father or my mother, I just felt so free. And I felt so connected to my ancestors. I felt so connected to my great-grandmother and my great-grandfather. I felt so connected to Taino Indians. Like, I felt so connected to, like, you know, the Afro dance and the, like, Afro-Caribbean beats and... You know, Celia Cruz and Buena Vista Social Club and Hector Lavoe and Willie Colon. And like, I grew up with that. So it was super old school.
So, you know, from the kid doing salsa and dancing to you're then moving from being a dancer to being in front of the camera. Can you make that connection for us?
So dancing for me was my liberation from a dangerous neighborhood. It was liberation from our... socially, economically challenged upbringing. It was getting out of Chicago when I was meeting other dancers in the World Salsa Congress that were Russian and Italian and French, and they were dancing salsa just as badass, if not better, you know? And it was what showed me that there was more than Fullerton and Cicero. For my parents, education was number one. It was not even a question. It was, you're getting the best education. We're not going on trips. You're not getting Christmas gifts because we're spending money on education.
Wow.
We went to magnet grammar schools. We went to college preparatory high schools. You know, I ended up going to NYU Tisch School of the Arts, which was definitely a nice fight I had to put up to get to allow my parents to go into the world of art. You know, in retrospect, if it wasn't for dancing, I don't know if I would be here today. At such a young age, asking to be a part of that dance company showed me that if I ask for what I want, I just might get it.
Is that where your dad at the Golden Globes, you know, you can and you will, comes in?
Yeah.
And the Golden Globe goes to Gina Rodriguez, Jane the Virgin.
My father used to tell me to say every morning, today's going to be a great day, I can and I will. Well, Dad, today's a great day, I can, and I did.
I can and I will. My father was always very motivational growing up, and to me, it's so interesting because as such an empowering, such an uplifting, a self-motivated man, a self-educated man, neither of my parents graduated from college, and they really raised three successful women. He got into an accident when I was 15 years old, and he had a parasite in the left side of his brain, and he had seizures in his car. He drove off the road into a golf course. The jaws of life were needed to take him out of it. We thought we were going to lose my father. And what ended up being a horrific accident turned into probably one of the greatest blessings, because my father's motivation kicked into high gear. My father's self-improvement, self-help kicked into, like, super high gear.
Wow.
where he would whisper to me at night, you can be anything you want to be. And I'd wake up and I'd be like, Dad, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he'd be like, I'm talking to your subconscious. Go back to sleep.
No, wait a second.
Yeah, swear to God. That is not a lie. That happened to me on multiple occasions.
Like, he'd be laying by your bedside being, yeah, you can be. Oh, dude, I love this.
Yeah, you just got to talk to your kids while they're sleeping and creep them out. It's totally going to work.
Coming up on Latino USA, Gina talks about why she's decided to pull away from social media and her starring role in the new action movie, Miss Bala. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment at your convenience. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions. Plus, chat and text with your therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
I feel pretty.
When do we feel pretty?
Oh, so pretty.
Why do we feel pretty? And who gets to decide what pretty is? We'll answer our listeners' questions all about beauty this week on the Code Switch podcast.
We're back. Recently, Gina Rodriguez has been the center of debate online for comments she made that have been interpreted by some as being anti-Black. It's a difficult subject that comes up because of moments like this clip from an interview with Gina Rodriguez and her co-star Yara Shahidi for the animated movie Smallfoot. The interviewer asks Yara, who is Black, a question, and then Gina interrupts.
You are just goals for so many young Black women who just look
for
up to
so many
you.
Women.
So many women.
Women.
Yeah, for women too, but for Black women, we need people on a whole nother level.
Online, some have said that this comment, along with other things that Gina has said in interviews, appears to pit Latinos against the Black community and ignores Afro-Latinos. In this half of my conversation with Gina, I talk more about that controversy and about how she's decided to pull back from social media. There was a time when you were like crazy posting on Insta, and you know, I'm an Instagram freak like you, and I was like, ¿dónde está? She's at the border. What is she doing? Like, I just didn't know. And I feel now that I saw your movie, I was like, oh, that's what she was doing.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. You know, and honestly, currently, I've separated myself from social media. I have removed myself from that space as much as I used to because it's not so...
That's what I realized.
Yeah, it's not so great for mental health. I think that, like, both the positive and the negative are damaging. I don't think the ego is supposed to know that much positive or that much negative. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, how did you do that, though? Like, was that... And did your team freak out when you said that?
No, nobody freaked out when I said that because I didn't set out to be famous on Instagram. I set out to do great work in places that create real change. And I don't think that's social media apps. I think social media apps are used for connecting and sharing, but not necessarily progressively creating change. And so, you know, I used to believe that that was the space in which I can create change. And I realized that's definitely 100% not the space. So I have discovered where the spaces are for me to be in positions of power to create the change I want to see in this industry. And once I discovered that, then I like, you know, I started to protect my mental health.
Which leads me to the next point, which is, you know, you have chosen to kind of put yourself into that role of being a cultural activist, kind of shining light, saying we need more roles. But at the same time, as you know, sometimes it's like you say one thing and you're trying to be helpful and suddenly the Twitter backlash just comes at you. How do you feel that you've managed the fact that you've wanted to be an activist, but at the same time, you've been accused of being insensitive towards other women, to other Latinas, to other Black actors? And it's like, how did that happen? And how do you feel about the fact that this is even a part of the conversation of what your trajectory has been?
There is no part of my heart that has ever sought out to hurt anyone for a millisecond. I empathize with the pain in the world right now. I feel it. I've felt it. That being said, I know my intention. I know the kind of work I create. I know the kind of opportunities I create for women, women of color, and people all over. The people that, quote unquote, clap back do not know me, do not know what I do. And should I ever say anything that makes anyone feel like I am not being considerate or sensitive, then I will forever be sorry for that. And I will continuously apologize. I believe somebody that is creating space for an underrepresented community is not taking space from anyone else, because that is not the way the world works. So I personally fall apart at times when that happens. But to me, hopefully my actions speak louder than words. And I know that.
Gina's newest project is her action film, Miss Bala. In the film, Gina Rodriguez plays Gloria, who's a makeup artist who lives in Los Angeles. She goes to visit her friend who lives in Tijuana, who is preparing to compete in a beauty pageant.
After my parents died, you know, I didn't really think I was going to be able to come back to Tijuana.
But you always made me feel like family. You are my family.
But things go bad pretty quickly. Gloria's best friend is kidnapped, and she ends up having to fight the cartel in order to survive.
I can help you find your friend, but you have to do something for me first. You do that, and I'll help you find Susan. You mess around, and I'll kill you both.
Now, I gotta tell you, the first thing that I picked up with Miss Bala was Ibeyi singing the opening song.
Yes.
It's frustrating when you just can't express yourself, and it's hard to trust enough to undress yourself.
So I was like, okay, I already love this. It's a woman director. Your character is a Mexican young woman, lives a very short time in Tijuana, and then is raised, I think, in, well, someplace in California.
Well, and she is a nondescript of Latina, Latinx.
Okay.
She never mentions her ethnicity.
It's true. Well, at one point she says something about, I always feel strange.
I lived here because my father had a maquiladora. I never felt comfortable here or in the States.
Correct. And she also says when she goes back to visit, there's something where you're saying, I'm not sure how I feel when I'm coming back here or something. And very quickly that leads into like that thing that we know so well. You know, you're immediately called a pocha.
Yeah, that's my real life experience.
I love the fact that you kind of went there like straight up and that you were with your Spanish speaking Tijuana based girlfriend and that it was fluid that she could be speaking to you in Spanish and you would answer her in English. Y como que no había ningún problema. Like, it was totally fine.
Yeah, I think that's very much the Latinx experience. If you're first, second, third generation, or like me, it's very similar to Jane, where her grandmother speaks Spanish and she responds in English. That was definitely my upbringing. My parents were petrified of us getting discriminated against and because of should we have an accent, as both my parents have slight accents. And they had really tough time in the 60s and the 70s in New York and Chicago. So they raised their children speaking English. But the dual identity, I mean, I wasn't American enough for Chicago, and I wasn't Puerto Rican enough when I went to Puerto Rico.
I'm so right
and I
there.
Dealt with that everywhere I walked. And I still deal with that now, you know? You know, I'm like not American enough for the industry, but not Puerto Rican enough for the Latino community.
So the thing about the movie, I wonder, in the very beginning, you know, and I actually lived in Tijuana for a minute. I lived there for about a year. I lived in La Calle Sexta in an artist colony, actually.
Very cool.
So the Centro Cultural de Tijuana, the CECUT, which is front and center. And I was like, I was so excited that you were opening the film by showing kind of the Centro Cultural de Tijuana, this huge cultural center that is like one of the top cultural centers in Mexico, the country.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh no, wait, it's Narcos, wait. And I wonder how you felt about kind of doing a movie now, talking about the border and violence on the border. Yes, it's all centered in Mexico. It's an all Latino pretty much cast. But what are your thoughts about kind of doing a film about the border, about drugs in this particular moment as an artist?
Well, I'm going to say that I don't personally think the film is about drugs or the border. I think it's about a young woman's journey through a tumultuous and dangerous situation that happens to be set in our world. There is crime all over. And when, you know, when a Jason Bourne is made, or, you know, a Sparrow or an Atomic Blonde, and it's a white lead, do we get into the politics of what's happening into those countries when they're talking about crime? Or is it just solely when we're discussing our community? And is it only because it's reflective of what's happening in our divisive administration? You know, and we made this movie 2 years ago before Donald Trump was creating so much, the extent of his divisiveness. We were creating a really fun action movie that has nothing to do with immigration, border. Like, it has to do with these two people looking for their identity. It redeems a villain that we often see as just one-sided. The heroes and the villains are both Latino, Latinx. We're the writer and the DP. We're the cast and the crew. The success of Ms. Bala means opportunity for others. The success of Ms. Bala means more films with Latino, Latina leads and Latinx in front of and behind the camera, which since I made Ms. Bala has yet to come across my desk again. I have yet to have another opportunity where a studio is putting millions of dollars behind an all Latinx cast and crew.
Probably people will always point to Jane the Virgin, which is now in its last season. And I'm just wondering, as such an important show, I mean, the stories, the fact that we were seeing our own version of our own telenovela, U.S. made, as you're getting ready to say goodbye to Jane, what's the legacy that you want to leave?
Jane has been, you know, it was my introduction to so many households. And she fails and she succeeds and she tries, and there's so much reality and there's so much social commentary without judgment in our show. You know, it's been such a blessing. And if I never do anything again, Jane was enough. You know, here we are. I'm like, I'm closing the chapter of my childhood goal. Entering into this space of Ms. Bala and doing movies, and as a producer, understanding that the success of Ms. Bala creates other opportunities for my fellow actresses and actors of my community, that feels of a pressure I've never felt before. And it's self-induced because nobody said, like, all right, Gina, this is all on you. But I do that. I was raised that way. I take it on. I don't wait for anyone. And I say, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to try. And that's what I'm just constantly doing, Maria, is just trying.
Thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA, Gina.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the support.
Ms. Bala is out in theaters now. Gina Rodriguez continues to be busy. She's now the voice of Carmen Sandiego in the recent Netflix revival of that show. And the CW has just announced a spinoff of Jane the Virgin. It's called Jane the Novela.
This episode was produced by Sofia Paliza-Carr and edited by Miguel Macias. The Latino USA team includes Marlon Bishop, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with additional editing by Allison McAdam. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidel-Hotz. Our interns are Caroline Aguirre and Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. And one more thing, dear listener, we really love hearing from you. So if you can take a moment to go to your favorite podcast app and rate and review Latino USA, the comments that you write are read in our office and we love them. So keep them coming. And this helps other people to find us on the air. So thanks a lot. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Ciao.
Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. And Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
Man, look at this. You're now 34 and your dream is coming true. Good job, Gina. Only took you 19 years. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you did it. 19 years. Not so bad, you know?
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, you've heard about it plenty of times before, and it's often being criticized. It's NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. We look into its history and its impact in Mexico, where the same people who used to buy their food at a local mercado now just visit the closest Walmart. That's next time on Latino USA.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. There are lots of places to debate today's issues if you don't mind getting attacked for speaking your mind or asking a simple question. But 1A is different. You'll find the 1A podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.